Thanks for tuning in to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thirst for More podcast was created to help strength and conditioning coaches, personal trainers, fitness enthusiasts, and anyone that loves lifting heavy shit all be connected under one roof. We take deep dives into coaching, programming and training, running gyms, nutrition, and overall improving your knowledge in the field of strength and conditioning. If you're new here, I'm glad you're able to tune in and hope you can just take away one awesome piece of information today to help you along with your journey. If you're a returning supporter, I appreciate you being along for the ride. Now let's dive into today's episode. I want to start out with a number that I think that should bother you. There's a trial out of the Journal of Strength and Conditioning published in 2025, so very recently, that did something that almost nobody has bothered to do properly. They took trained adults, gave all of them the exact same 10-week, 3-day-per-week, full-body training program. These are the same exercises, the same progression, same everything. And the only thing they changed was how it got delivered. So one group got a coach in the room, so it's in person, it's supervised. One group brought a program through an app, so it was remote, it was guided, but there was nobody standing there, obviously. And then one group got a program as a PDF. They basically said, hey, here's your plan, best of luck. The supervised group completed about 88% of their training sessions. The remote app guided group completed about 81% of those training sessions. And the group that got the PDF was around 52%. Now, I want you to look at where the cliff actually is here, because in most coaches in the industry here, in person versus online, and they picture a canyon, and in person on one side and online on the other side of that canyon, basically falling off a ledge because they think that online is going to be a bad thing. That's not what the data is actually showing us. The distance from in-person to remote coaching is about 7% here, or 7 points. The distance from remote coaching to a PDF obviously is nearly about 30%. So the cliff is not necessarily between the room and the screen. The cliff is between coached and not being coached. And if your virtual clients are dropping off, they're disappearing, ghosting you at week 5 or week 6 through your training program, I need you to sit at an uncomfortable possibility that it might not be the actual screen as the issue. It might be that somewhere in the move to online that we've quietly stopped coaching them and started sending them files or just the actual training programs. And so today I'm going to be able to help you fix just that. So welcome back to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley, and I'm really appreciative that you happen to carve any amount of time out today for this particular training episode. Now, wherever you are listening to this, again, I really appreciate your time. It truly means a lot to me. So again, thank you. And I do think that there is a lot of noise in the industry, and the fact that you choose to spend 40 to 60 minutes on my podcast episode really is important to me. I really appreciate that. So let me be honest about you about where this episode is coming from here today. I was not very good at online coaching. So not necessarily like still learning bad, not trying to like find my rhythm. Just overall, I didn't think I was very good. So I had clients online who I could not keep engaged past maybe 6 or 8 weeks. I told myself that the story that every coach tends to tell themselves, I said, well, hey, I'm a hands-on in-person type of coach. That's what I really like. I read people. I feel the room. I happen to see, like a small shoulder shrug in a back squat very particularly. I see very technical things when it comes to the actual training floor. And I believe that that is something of a gift that I have, and that the doing it online or having it come through a cell phone takes that gift away from me to not be able to actually be super great and honed in at my craft. And that story was, something that the way that I truly feel, right? And so what I want you to understand is that while I may have been having issues in person, my system is very clean and very good. Online, my systems were not really that great. So I did not have a system in place. I had to do stuff, right? I basically had this distance between me and another individual or any of the clients I'm working with. And you could call that essentially proximity. And proximity was doing all the work, and I was taking the credit for basically being by somebody versus not being by somebody, right? The client showed up because I was standing there at 6 o'clock in the morning, and then it would have been socially painful for many of those people to bail on me. And so I progressed the load because I could see that the bar speed would need to be increased for that individual person, right? Or maybe I caught that their low back was rounding because, you know, I'm right there 3 feet away. It's easy for me to pick up. So I noticed all those things because I'm there in person. Now, every single one of those was a coaching function, right? And every single one of them was being performed for me automatically for free by the fact that we were in the same room together, right? That's how I got the buy-in, because they're actually there in person with me. And then as I've been online for quite some time, but I realized that when I'm working with people online, right, the room is not there helping me throughout that process. And instead of building a system to replace what the room is giving me, basically people showing up and me actually being right there, right, I'm basically was blaming the phone or the online or the deliverability of it. And so here is the thesis, I guess, of this entire episode. And I want to say it very clearly so that you can decide right now whether you want to agree or disagree with me for the next, you know, 40, 50 minutes. And the basis of this is going to be that virtual coaching or online coaching does not fail because of the screen portion of it. It fails because coaches take a delivery model that was silently propped up by physical proximity, so being next to somebody, poured it into a medium that removes that prop and then blames the medium, right? Connection is not proximity. Connection is a designed system. And if you design it, the screen almost stops being what's actually there and being important. And so this is what I want to defend today, is I'm going to actually defend it with a little bit of research, some personal backing, what I've kind of noticed. And I'm going to be honest with you the whole way through it, of the issues that I've had and anything that's going on, because I would much rather you trust me and the issues that I've had, because I think it can be something that can potentially help you if you happen to work with people online. So let's dive into the episode more specifically. And so let us start with a sentence that more than likely you've probably said. I've said it, but you go into any coaching group, like on Facebook or any kind of mentorship, any kind of conversation at a conference, something like that, and someone will always say, you probably always hear it, online coaching is fine, but it's just not the same, right? Or online coaching is not the same as in-person. Now, I want to be really careful here, because I'm not going to insult you by pretending that the sentence is stupid. It is definitely not stupid. It is actually pointing at something true. It's just pointing at it very, very badly, in my opinion. Here's what's actually true and gets lost inside that thought process, is that something real is lost when you go remote. Several things, in fact, and let us name them very clearly here, because I do not think that you can build a good virtual practice by pretending that the losses are imaginary. So what you can actually lose is tactile feedback, right? You cannot put a hand on somebody's scapula and help it move, or you can't, you know, help them put their position, their hips in position through like a hip hinge if they're new to that. The kinesthetic cueing aspect as a category is usually entirely gone, right? You're also going to lose the spontaneous observation side. So in person, you catch the 1,000 micro things that you are not really looking for, right? Maybe, just a slight hip shift, or maybe the fact that people walk in, they're feeling flat, they're not feeling energized. Maybe the way that they're guarding like a shoulder or some kind of limb after like hard practice or something like that, right? There's also going to be the environmental control. So, you know, as a coach, if you're in the room, right, you're going to have the equipment, the bar, the plates, you know, the temperature, the music, the vibe, that's all going to be a little bit more controllable in the setting that you're in. We're online, your client could be training in a garage in July, you know, next to their lawnmower, and it'd be super hot, right? So something else to consider there. The real-time intercept correction, which I think is really the big key one here for me, at least in my opinion, when it comes to in-person, the latency is real. By the time you say, you know, maybe chest up or hips out, they've already finished the rep. The physics doesn't care about that, right? So you can get on them and fix them immediately, where after the fact, you're retroactively always addressing it. And then the social contract of showing up. This is a big one from in-person training, is somebody is waiting for you at a specific place at a specific time. And there's accountability. And that behavioral portion of it is something that keeps people showing up and keeps them consistent and keeps them making progress, where with like an app or online, that's not really there. Somebody's not necessarily there waiting for you at every single training session. And, you know, that is going to be a good, pretty comprehensive list. I'm not going to say that, you know, remote can replace all that. It's definitely always going to be something that you're going to lose when you go from to a remote option. But if a coach tells you that online coaching is identical to in-person in every single dimension, that coach is probably telling you something. So I do think there is value to in-person training. I'm not. We're just going to go over more of the remote stuff and how this can be a good bridge between a lot of things. But here is the move that I want you to make, and this is the really entire main portion of this episode, is I want you to think about that list again. Which of those five things is actually driving the training outcomes? Because most coaches, when they read that list, they fix on the first four, right? The touch, the observation side, the environment, the real-time correction. Those are things that feel like coaching, and those are the things that feel like you actually are using your skills. And those are the things that make us feel like professionals rather than people who email spreadsheets. And they are important, but they are not the thing necessarily. The thing is going to be the fifth thing that we discuss, the social contract of showing up, the accountability, the relationship that makes a human being do the hard things on a Tuesday, probably when they don't feel like actually doing it. And here's the one part that should genuinely change how you think about the business side of it, is the social contract is the only one on that list that does not actually require a shared room. It only requires a relationship between two people. And the relationship transmits through screens just entirely fine. We've learned this from COVID of how much we've actually had to use screens back and forth to be able to communicate and get things done. And so we have plenty of evidence to be able to support this. And I'm going to hopefully be able to help you go dig through some of that over the next 10 to 15 minutes. So the coach happens to say that it's just not the same. What they actually usually mean in that case is that I'm not able to use my hands and my eyeballs to be able to coach. And what they should be really thinking about more is, did I lose the relationship? And if so, why did I let that happen? Because the relationship was never in the room, probably. The relationship was in you as a person, and you never just had to build it deliberately before, because standing next to someone three times a week for a year does it whether you're trying to or not, if we're being honest. The more you continually work with people in person, you're going to be able to naturally be able to gain a relationship, where with online, that becomes a little bit more challenging to do. All right, let us do something here that I think is going to help clear this up a little bit from a research side and kind of put a little bit of evidence behind some of this. Because I think this is going to be interesting, and it's going to not say what either side's argument really wants it to say, but we're going to try to break it down. And I want to set some expectations here before we go into these. First, if you came into the episode expecting me to tell you that supervision is not important, you're going to be disappointed. I do believe it's important, especially as an in-person coach. The evidence is fairly clear on that. I'm also not here to tell you a comfortable lie, because it would make online coaches feel better about their business model. Now, this is going to be the important piece of research here that Massetti, Kramer, Volek, and generally stacked author list published this in Medicine, Science, and Sports and Exercise back in 2000. They took moderately trained men and randomly assigned them to 12 weeks of periodized heavy resistance training. One group had a personal trainer directly supervising them. The other group did the same program, but unsupervised. Did the same program, the same periodization, the preparatory phase, hypertrophy phase, strength phase, peaking phase, identical on paper. The supervised group got significantly greater maximal strength gains. But here is the finding inside that overall finding. And this is what I think everyone is probably going to try to skip over, is the supervised group did not get stronger because the trainer was some kind of magical person. They got stronger because the supervised group increased their training loads at a greater rate and to a greater magnitude than the unsupervised group. So the mechanism was the load progression. The supervised group added weight to the bar faster and more aggressively. The unsupervised group left it to their own devices, underloaded themselves. They basically sandbagged, if that's kind of the way you want to look at it. Not because that they were necessarily lazy, but because human beings are systematically bad at self-selecting an intensity that is actually going to be hard enough to push themselves, right? Most of the time, if you're probably hiring somebody for training or whatever, you're hiring them not only for accountability, but you're also hiring because they'll make you do the things that you don't want to do. And so if you don't have somebody there to do that for you, you're probably going to pick the easier option more than you're going to pick the hard option. Now, just to stop and think about that as a coach, here's what I've kind of think about this, is that if the mechanism is going to be how we progress the load, if the reason supervision works is that the coach makes you add weight when you would have kept it, you know, yourself on more on the comfortable side or the easier side, then we need to ask ourselves a question. Does that mechanism require the coach to actually be physically next to that person? Or does it require the coach to be able to see the data, know the athlete, and have the relationship and the authority to say, no, that was not a 6 out of 10 or, you know, an RP6. Put some more weight on the bar and to be able to move that forward a little bit more. Because the second portion of it, I can do that from hundreds of miles away, right? That travels over a screen or through an app perfectly fine. All right. Then we're going to have this pattern actually replicate again. So Kautz and Collins looked at rugby league players over 12 weeks and found greater 3-rep max bench and squat improvements in the supervised group compared to an unsupervised group. These were trained athletes, and it was basically the exact same story. Gentile and Bontero published in Journal Strength and Conditioning back in 2010. They took it further and asked about supervision ratio. So not just supervised or unsupervised, but how many athletes per coach. And unsurprisingly, tighter supervision ratios produce better adaptations in untrained subjects. So the direction of the effect is relatively consistent here, that more coach contact, they're going to see more adaptation. Now, I'm not going to argue with that. Nobody serious is going to argue with that, right? The more the coach can push you, probably the better that you're going to be. Now, here's where this gets actually interesting, and is where I think most of the industry has been arguing from vibes instead of from the effect sizes here, is that Fisher and colleagues published a systematic review and meta-analysis looking at supervised versus unsupervised resistance training. So roughly a dozen randomized controlled trials, and over 500 participants were through this. We had novices and trained lifters and covered here, so we had a wide variety. And when you pull it all together, supervised training produced a small to moderate positive effect on strength. And for body composition, for lean mass, the effect was essentially negligible. So small to moderate on the strength, negligible on the body composition. Now, you can probably say that's probably because of the nutrition side more than anything else. Now, I want to be really careful and really fair here, because this is exactly the kind of finding that gets weaponized with people selling $9 a month app coaching, all right? A small to moderate effect is not nothing. In a competitive athlete, small to moderate strength effects over a season can be the difference between a scholarship and a walk-on spot if we're talking about the collegiate athletes. Are coaching a power lifter chasing a total, you know, you take every piece of that you can to be able to get what you can and be able to see progress on the platform or be able to help an athlete improve their performance. But for the general population client, you know, say the 42-year-old who just wants to get strong and feel better and not have their back hurt when they're doing stuff with their kids, a small to moderate strength training advantage or having a coach physically present is a very different proposition. So especially when it costs them 3 times as much as it requires them to drive across town 2 to 4 times per week to get their training sessions in. So the honest read of the supervising literature is going to be this. The supervision obviously helps. Right? Supervision, however, though, is not magic. And crucially, the reason supervision helps appears to be almost entirely mediated by things that are, in principle, transmissible over a screen. So, what is the supervision actually doing? One, it makes people load harder and progress faster, right? That's going to be the main thing that we get here. Number two, it improves technical execution. So if they do the technique better, they're less likely to get hurt. They'll be able to see more consistent, load the right tissues, right? All those things. And number three, it increases adherence. And I think that that's probably the big thing that most people like about the in-person training side. So only the second thing is generally degraded by the screen, the technical execution side of it. And we know that's not the biggest driver. Now, maybe if you're, you know, an elite powerlifter or something like that, and you need a lot of hands-on and a lot of eyes to be able to really iron some stuff out, maybe. But overall, that shouldn't be the main issue that people are trying to get help from the in-person training side of things. All right. So let's kind of come back here and go back to the initial study that I kind of dropped at the beginning, that one in 2025. And what makes this one special is that it not just do supervised versus unsupervised, it added the middle condition, the one that actually reflects how most of us are trying to potentially run an online training business here in 2026. So there's three arms here, roughly 80 trained men and women, 10 weeks, three full-body training sessions a week, same program across all three groups. So there's basically three different ways that we had this here. The group one was supervised, the coach was in the room. The group two was the app guided. So there's remote coaching, there's structures guided, but there's nobody actually standing there. And then the third group is obviously the self-guided one with a PDF, and they're saying, hey, we wish you all the best. Now, I want you to look at how this data could be presented and how we can kind of break this down, I guess. So we've spent basically the past maybe 5 to 10 years arguing about the 7% difference when we talked about that, you know, the 88% for the coaching group showing up and then the 81% for the online and yada, yada. And the 7% of having the coach in the room and versus the screen, and what every single debate is about is that the online coaching could be like a scam because you're not actually there. You post on Instagram, but we're talking about 7% here. Meanwhile, nobody's actually going to talk about the like 29-point swing of just delivering a program and never working with anybody actually ever again and getting the coaching side, because that 29, 30 points or whatever it is between having the training program and having somebody actually coach you with it to actually help you through things is going to be the huge leverage point of still getting coaching, right? I think that many people are fighting over the wrong gap between in-person online versus just delivering a program and not actually getting any kind of coaching with it. And I think if you do online coaching, I think this should be the important part is what is your actual competition like? So your competition is not going to be the in-person trainer down the street, right? For most of your potential remote clients, the alternative to hiring you is not hiring a better coach in person. The alternative is then going to be like the PDF or just that one-time kind of program purchase. The alternative is the free program that they screenshot from like Instagram or get from Google or ChatGPT. So the alternative there is nothing. So if you're not competing against the 88%, then you're competing against the 52% or, you know, the people that are basically just getting a program and just trying to run it by themselves and there's no actual coaching. And we are basically trying to bring that 81% to the fight, right? We're trying to get people to stay consistent with what they're doing. And so we want to sell that, hey, that accountability piece that we can provide is going to be the leverage puller to continue to get people progress. And so here's what I want to be honest with you as well, and where I also think I want a challenge of how you think about this, is that the 7% gap, you know, is basically a way of how we can look at the remote condition and delivered in the study, and that, you know, it was clearly app guided, right? App guided is more important than just delivering a training program. So it's structured, yes, it's programmed, yes, but the app guided is not the same as the coached side. And so in that trial, the remote group had a program and a system. What we do not know is how much genuine individualization, relational coaching that they actually received. And so I'm going to make a claim now that I want to basically call out that I believe a well-designed, high-touch, relationally driven remote coaching model closes most of that 7 point or 7% gap that we have between in-person and online. But I also want to be very clear that, you know, it's not a mechanism argument that we're going against here. Is my reasoning is for what we know about this, how supervision works, right? It's not that nobody has not done this. We know that the more deliverables or the more that you can be involved, the better it's going to actually help people not only stay consistent, but actually be able to see progress and then also be able to address their issues. And then that keeps them on pace to be able to continue to make progress. So do that in-app guided thing. Like, there are apps that you can get for $23 a month. Tether Lite's in-app guided, and I would say those probably do relatively well. But if we start really individualizing stuff and reaching out and being able to have more touch points, that could be a pretty important aspect as well. So if we know that adherence is the name of the game and adherence is driven by the relationships that we have, then the entire question of the episode is really going to fall down to a much smaller question is, can you build a real relationship online through a screen? And I want to bring in a little bit of research as well on this front, because I think that this is a mistake and something that we miss out on, is because that we've been trying to figure out how much we need to communicate with somebody for it to feel like in-person training, even though it's not in-person training, and to be able to make sure that it's also a good value at the end of the day. But we also need to use the psychology piece of that to be able to, one, help sell, but also to be able to, again, truly coach at the end of the day. Now, in clinical psychology and physical therapy, there's a construct called the therapeutic alliance, all right? And I did not know about this, so I had to do a little bit of digging. The collaborative bond between the practitioner and the client. So the trust, the shared goals, the sense that we are in this together and this person is on my side. And this is not like a soft, fuzzy, nice to have variable. Therapeutic alliance is one of the most consistent predictors of treatment outcome across the entire clinical literature that we have. And so it shows up regardless of the specific modality, the relationship predicts the result. So what telehealth has recently exploded. You've probably heard about it. Maybe you've used it. Some healthcare is really obviously trying to push the telehealth side, and the field has a genuine crisis that practitioners were convinced that the alliance could not survive going through an online side, and that it would basically be like a cold relationship, be impersonal, that the human thing would evaporate. And it turns out that they were actually wrong. The evidence has accumulated since, and it's fairly consistent, that the working alliance formed in remote delivery is broadly comparable to the alliance formed in person. Non-inferiority analysis have failed to find statistically significant differences in working alliance between online and in-person delivery. And more critically, the alliance to outcome relationship, the thing that's actually important, holds up in the remote side of the context. There is also a telerehabilitation literature specifically that was also done. And they found that patient satisfaction with telerehab across ages, conditions, and providers was very high. Now, I think that's pretty interesting. I personally am not a huge telehealth guy. I like to have a doctor be able to look at me, but you know, I'm also not very sick very often. But I also can see where for smaller things, it could be very beneficial as well, very time saving. Now, I also want to be very cautious here, because I know this is not strength and conditioning. So, talking someone through anxiety on a video call is not the same as coaching, say, like a clean or a jerk or a back squat or a front squat, right? The transfer is not going to be perfect, and so I'm not going to pretend like that is. But the mechanism that we care about, can a human being feel genuinely seen, supported, held accountable by another human being over video connection or through online? That question has been asked and answered repeatedly in populations far more probably sensitive, I guess is probably the best way to put it, than our general population strength training client. So the answer is then going to be yes. And based upon what we've been able to find online, that it's not even close. Now, self-determination theory gives us the mechanism. And once you see that, I think you'll be able to understand why this is a little bit more important. And it says that motivation that actually lasts, so autonomous motivation, the kind that survives like a bad week, a busy month, is built on three psychological needs. It's built on relatedness, competence, and autonomy. So relatedness is going to be like, I feel connected to and cared for by my coach. And so how the screen is going to affect this is that it's neutral, right? It's fully transmissible. This is a design choice, not necessarily anything else. Now, on the competence side, what that means is that I feel like I'm getting good at this and I am making progress, right? That's how our clients are hopefully feeling. Can they actually be better online, right? We can have data, we can have video, we can have tracking, we have physical progress. We can actually use all that data a little bit more. Then on the autonomy side, clients thinking, I am doing this because I chose it, not because someone is standing over me. And this strongly favors the remote side of it, right? The client must self-start, and that's the point. So we want to try to be able to get that through. So we do have to have some certain people. Some people are just not good with autonomy, and so that blends them more towards the in-person side. But if people do have a strong portion of autonomy, a lot of times remote or online training can be a much better benefit for them as well. And more so on the autonomy side, I think it's the thing that we concern ourselves with more with the in-person coaching, that the coach is standing obviously right there, applying pressure, making them do it. And self-determination theory would call that more of a controlled motivation, right? There's external regulation, and the research on autonomous versus controlled motivation is not ambiguous, that Williams and colleagues showed that autonomous regulation predicted exercise adherence and retention with effects persisting beyond a year. So controlled motivation does not do that. And so here's the uncomfortable thought that I will leave here in this regard, in terms of the self-determination theory and the autonomy and all that kind of stuff, is that our in-person client who only trains when you are there in person is not necessarily going to be a quote-unquote coaching success story. That is going to be more of a little bit of a dependency side. You have built a person who exercises when supervises, and then they stop when they're unsupervised. So if they're not willing to do it without a coach, there could be some issues with that. Now, I will say some people like the personality side of it, of, you know, they're outgoing people. So I do get that. But the day that that client happens to move or change jobs, they have a kid, or they cancel for whatever reason, that whole thing is going to collapse because we never actually transferred anything to them. And so that's one of the big goals that I have when I work with people in person, is that if, you know, we happen to not work with them or they happen to leave, we want to make sure that they can be able to find somewhere else to go as well, right? We don't want to just let them leave it hanging. But there are many people that we'd work with. Kids and job changes are two really big ones that get a lot of people to stop coming to the gym. And those are the people that we really have to try to work on and how we communicate with them. Now, the virtual online client who trains alone in their garage at 5:30 in the morning because they chose to, and it's when they can basically make it fit, because they believe in the plan, right? Because they do not want to let you down, and because they do not want to let themselves down. And that client is going to have autonomous motivation. That's the important part. That client is, in the deepest sense, a better coaching outcome, at least from a coach client relationship, right? We know that the online app delivery or how we were coaching them didn't make them necessarily any weaker, or, you know, it didn't necessarily hinder their progress. It actually forced us to actually build something positive in them, and then we let the training program do its job and they stay connected with us. All right. So enough of all the research and theory side. If you've listened to all that, I really appreciate you being patient. Let's actually build the thing and what we can actually do here. So there's five things I think are important. And if you instill these, I believe that you are going to be doing a lot better job coaching. So the first thing that we're going to talk about is touch point is going to be the intake that's going to earn trust. So the first touch point should not necessarily be a Google form. I know it's efficient. I don't really care. That form is going to be the single highest leverage relationship moment that you'll ever have with that client, and you are outsourcing it into basically a spreadsheet or what have you. I think it's really important that that can be a step in the process, but I think one of the first things we try to do is get on video, right? Whether it be 15 minutes, 30 minutes, 60 minutes, that's up to you. We don't want to spend that time necessarily collecting data. We can do that after the call. We want to spend that doing a couple of things. If we can, I think we should do that using some kind of movement screen, especially if we're talking about pain or trying to build out a really good customized training program. I think we should try to do that even on camera, do some things for different angles, right? We're not necessarily just assessing them. We're actually demonstrating that we can actually see them. We can see them move. We can get an idea of what's going on. And this movement decide whether you're a real coach or not. I think it's a way to separate things and basically give yourself a leg up more so than anything else. I don't think you have to do it, but I do think it is a way to watch your client do stuff. If you don't want to do this, I do think it's great if you can have them send you videos of particular lifts, say like squat, bench, and deadlift, or maybe a hinging pattern, what have you. If they've not been working out, ask them to do a couple things and send them to you, and then you go over them together. That's also another option. The next portion of it is then going to be the why now. So not simply asking them what are their goals, why is this now? Everyone says fat loss or getting stronger, what their goals are. Those are pretty normal. We want to ask, why are you doing this now? Why this month after all this time? Why didn't you do this previously? And that's going to be the fuel to their fire and hopefully help keep them motivated. And then we actually want to dig into the failure side. So tell me the last time that you started a training program, why you stopped, what happened, where did I fall apart, why did that happen? And it will give you more of why they fail things and be able to give you an idea of how their adherence is going to be, but also you can build a system around what tends to cause them to make them fail. And I think most people are not asking those, and those can be things that you can use to help keep them on track and also show that, hey, my goal is to keep you motivated and keep you going and keep you continuing to make progress. All right. The second thing is then going to be the camera and coaching mechanic side of it. And this is the part that I think many people can get wrong, and I think it's very easy to fix. Really, you want to kind of look at things at two angles. So for any lift that we happen to be assessing, whether they send in the lifts or we're doing it over the call, you really want like a 45-degree front angle from them, not necessarily a true lateral one. And then one, so, and then that will be able to get a lot of stuff. And then we want to make that sure that that portion of getting the angles, getting multiple angles, is kind of like a non-negotiable. So I think one that you have to have is that front degree, 45-degree front angle facing one. And then the other one other there, if you can get either a rear or a lateral, depending upon what you're looking at, you can decide on using your coaching eye there of what you kind of want. I think you should also try to provide cues before, not necessarily during that portion of it. So if you're on that live call, that's going to be able to set them up for success initially. And then, you know, if you're not on a live call, whenever you're giving any kind of cues in a training program, right, you're not going to be able to fix that mid-rep. So this is going to be able to, one, let you be able to beat out any lag. It's going to let you front-load the issues, get ahead of them. One cue, focus on that, and then you can adjust from there based upon what you're seeing. And if I'm being honest, most coaches over-cue anyways. That's just the way that it is. So one cue per set, or one cue per activity that you're doing, and then go from there and you'll be good. And then also from a, when you're on that call, just make sure that overall your camp looks good, right? You've got, nothing too crazy. Things look professional, decent lighting. They can be able to hear you well. All of that is going to be relatively helpful and keep things clean and crisp. It's not necessarily a requirement, but all that stuff does definitely help, especially it does make you look a little more professional. And then obviously show your face, right? If we're on a call, we want to be on the camera, right? We actually want to have our face on there. So if you go off camera to go do something or whatever, that's one thing. Maybe like share a screen or what have you, but overall you should have your face there, be a person, just like you are there in person. All right. The third thing is then going to be talking about the feedback loop side, and this is going to be our replacement for the real-time observation. And when this is done well, it could be just as good as almost doing things in person. So first of all, you want to have a good quality turnaround window. So if the video comes in from them or them doing an exercise, the feedback, give that back to them within 24 to 40 hours. Make sure that that's overall standard. You want to stay to it. Make sure you try to keep that up to date as much as you can. If something happens, obviously let them know, but try to stay into a feedback loop with that person as much as you can. If you have the ability to give video feedback, I think that's great. Make sure you're just clear on what you have there. But the more video feedback that you can give, especially for technical issues, the better. You can record your screen, going over stuff. That's all fine. You can definitely talk about going over their lifts or be able to draw on things if at all possible. Actually, obviously, talk while you're doing it. This could be 30, 60, 90 seconds, depending on what you're getting. But it's definitely going to outbeat just a regular message that just says, looks good, breaks harder, what have you. We also want to usually try to praise something specifically first. So not necessarily to be nice, but because specificity is proof that you're paying attention to what's going on, right? Your foot pressure was better than maybe it was a few weeks ago, or your leg drive is a little bit better. You're keeping your hips down. Your elbow position's better. You know, your hips are going back more, whatever that is. That's going to let them know that you actually watched the videos and paid attention. And then actually name what you can't see. So I can't necessarily, feel how you're bracing or your tightness. Let me know how things felt with this minor adjustment. Right? It lets them actually know that you're looking for some feedback on what you're giving them and what they're feeling in return. And that's actually going to have them be more involved in the coaching process and building some autonomy and actually looking to go back and try stuff. And I think that communication side also gives you a leg up as well. Now, remote coaching is going to force you to teach the client to basically self-assess, right? And so because you are not there to assess for them in the given training session. And that's not necessarily an issue with the online training side. I think it actually can be a good quality, durable thing that you can give somebody for them to be able to assess in the middle of the training sessions. All right, the fourth thing, and I think this is actually going to directly replace being in the room, gives you for free. And I think it's where most online coaches don't really have a whole lot. A scheduled check-in is pretty sacred. The same day, same time, every week. It's a standing appointment, basically, not a hey, whenever you get the chance. The moment becomes optional instead, and then your attention dies about a couple weeks later. So make sure you've got a check-in process of when they should be submitting stuff or they're doing things. I always give people their check-in stuff on Saturday to be able to fill out. That's just for me. The silent client protocol, I'm sure you guys will have this. Define in advance what triggers an intervention. My threshold, 2 missed sessions or 72 hours of silence of not hearing from them or they're not doing their training sessions. We don't want to send a passive aggressive message. We just get a hold of them, actually try to say, hey, what's going on? Make sure everything is okay. Is there anything that you need, something going on? And then you can also say, hey, I noticed that you've been quiet for a bit. I'm not necessarily going to get on you about doing your training sessions. I'm just trying to make sure that usually when somebody's quiet, means something's going hard, something's going on, something's hard, something's challenging. I'd much rather be here to help you for that rather than just, let you go through the issues and not be able to get any kind of help. You can keep track of these, log the issues that you're seeing. That way you can know if these are going to be clients that are going to be trouble or issues down the line, or if they're people that you're going to stay on top of a little bit more than others. There's always going to be some of those people. And then also just giving those little micro touches, every so often, hey, how are things going? So all these are going good, yada, yada, yada. I think those little micro touches can be really good things as well. All right. Number 5 is going to be the final one, and that's going to be the one I think can actually help coaches build a good quality virtual practice from coaches who actually are basically just running an expensive app, is that we know that supervision works because supervisors and lifters progress their load faster and harder. And so that means our entire job remotely should be to build a client who can load themselves correctly without us in the room. So we want to teach RPE or RIR, whichever one you like to use. You can write on the sheet, but I also like to provide a way in the app that people can actually look at the RPE sheet that I have and basically help them make decisions better, teach it. I think it's doing things like that will really help them understand where they should go. You can also give auto-regulation ranges, not necessarily fixed numbers, so work up to a top set of whatever at RPE8, and then here's some back-off sets at a certain percentage of that. Now they have a decision to make, and every decision that they make correctly builds on that. We can make them explain the why. Why do you think we drink or drop the volume this week? You know, if they happen to ask, then you answer those questions. We'll talk about that if you need to. And then we also build in deliberate solar weeks on purpose, where maybe they run things. We just do a little bit of a check-in here and there, and then they kind of go on their own. Especially on the accessory work side, I'm not really big in terms of programming a lot of like RPU and accessory work. I kind of let them self-monitor some of those things. Now, for the people that are gym owners and people trying to build something that could last a little longer, here's something I think you can consider. The in-person one-on-one is the highest status thing that we sell, and in a lot of markets, it can be the worst business side. So we're trading hours for dollars, and we're capped by the clock, by the drive time and the square footage, and then your revenue ceiling and the math problem can't necessarily work out all the best way. So virtual is not necessarily a downgrade of that product. It's framing why so many coaches price it as a discount and then resent it. So virtual is a different product with a different value proposition. And that value proposition is not cheaper in-person coaching. It's more geographic freedom, right? Your addressable market goes from a 15-minute drive radius to basically anybody that can speak. You schedule freedom for the client, the busy executive, the shift worker. They can do it when it works best for them. Continually, your client can travel, move, change jobs, and doesn't have to actually worry about finding a new coach. And autonomy building, as we've already covered, is arguably a superior long-term outcome that you could be selling through online. There are two hard rules, and both of these hills I personally will die on. Do not price virtual as a discount on in-person training. The second you frame it as the cheap version, you have told the client that it is worse. You've told yourself that it deserves less of your attention. Price it as your own product, just with your own deliverables. And then also cap your virtual roster honestly. The reason online coaching has a bad reputation is that people try to take 200 clients at $100 a month, and then they deliver everybody the same PDF. And that's not a business model. That's not a good way to do training. It's really just a really disservice to the industry as a whole. So if your system is going to be high touch, your roster has to be a real number, a number that's smaller than you actually think it needs to be. I think 20 to 30 for most people is more than realistic to be able to provide a good quality service. The hybrid model, honestly, is where I think most of us should try to live. A little bit in-person initiatives for those that we happen to be able to do that with. Work hands-on, do some assessment. Weekly virtual accountability side, the programming's all delivered like that. We still have a relationship. And I think that was, if you can do that, that's a great place to be. And it's going to be able to let you do a lot more other stuff as well. It's kind of the best of both worlds. Now, before I let you go, I'm going to talk about that. I think what many people would potentially leave out, and here's where I might be wrong. The supervision advantage is real, right? I spent 10 minutes basically minimizing it, and I want to correct the record here before we go, is that if you're coaching a competitive athlete, chasing marginal gains in-person supervision is probably worth what it costs. So I'm not going to tell you that a national or world-class level lifter to go remote just to save me. I think if you need to get in front of a real person, you absolutely get in front of a real person, right? I work with a lot of children. There's no way children can do online training, right? So there are certainly important ways to go about this. And so my main claim about closing the gap is mechanistic, not proven. And I argued that high touch remote coaching closes most of those adherence gap issues. And I reasoned that from that mechanism. So, you know, nobody has run the trial that compares high touch human remote coaching client against in-person supervision head to head. So just keep that in mind. And then the Alliance research is not our research. I lean on telehealth and physical therapy literature, obviously, for that. So those are different populations doing different things. The transfer can obviously be there, but it's not necessarily going to be quite as established as doing like remote training. And then technical coaching genuinely degrades. If you're teaching a snatch to beginner, then I think a screen is a real handicap, and I would obviously not pretend otherwise, right? But high-skilled, high-risk barbell technique is the strongest case against the remote only side of it. So take what is useful there, argue with the rest. Yeah, that's what this show is really so about. So here's what I want you to take out of this episode, that the screen is never usually the issue. The screen usually just took away the crutch, and the crutch was maybe the proximity with our clients. So it was doing a little of our program accountability, helping with our load progressions, our relationship building for us. We didn't necessarily have to rely on that in person. We can do that online as well. So here is something I think that you can try to do is really just work with your clients, both in person and online, treat them basically the same. Know that there's not really that much of a difference. Respect each one of them if you happen to have them, but I do think the way that you deliver your online stuff can be done just much like you're in person. Clearly, everybody has their own cup of tea. I really like doing stuff in person. I do online, but I do both, but I make sure how I use those worlds and how I do that definitely helps. So you can definitely try to be as human with your online clients as much as you possibly can. If you happen to have a client you've heard from in a while online, just say, notice I've been quiet. I'm not trying to get on you, right? I'm just trying to get a hold of you to make sure that things continue to go well for us and feel good. Be quiet, be listen, do your coaching side, and then things should be good to go there. Now, if you happen to enjoy this episode, do me a favor, share it with a friend, coach, colleague, hit that like button, subscribe over on YouTube, leave a 5-star review over on Spotify, Apple, iTunes, wherever you happen to be listening and enjoying your podcast. I always appreciate that. And then you can also make sure you give me a follow at bsmitley on Instagram. That's bsmitley. And you also check out all your NutriBio supplements at NutriBio.com. Use the code smitley10, smitley10, and I'll save you 10% off all your orders. As always, thanks for tuning in to the Thirst for More podcast. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. I'll make sure I see you at the next episode.
Thanks for listening to the Thirst for More podcast. Make sure you give us a follow on Spotify, iTunes, or anywhere else you like to consume your podcast. You can also check us out on YouTube at The Smitley, where you'll find clips and lots of educational-based material for strength and conditioning and exercise science. You can also make sure you give me a follow on Instagram at The Smitley or at Team Thirst, which is my gym Instagram page. For any more future updates on episodes to come, you can make sure you follow me there. I'm your host, Brandon Smitley. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll catch you at the next episode.